Please give a warm welcome to our speaker tonight, John from the Sober at 7 Home Group. I'm John, alcoholic.
Hello, John.
And grateful to be here today. Mickey, thanks for asking me. My sobriety date is March 25th, 2005. I was about 30 years old when I got sober. Just a brief history of myself. I grew up in Minnesota. Not a particularly special childhood. Mom, dad got divorced when I was young. Mom remarried, had three brothers, lived in the suburbs, played sports, went to a good high school. I think I started drinking regularly, well, I say regularly, every weekend probably when I was about 14 years old. And I remember it was me and about five buddies, and one of them had a fake ID, and he was able to get, I don't know if you're familiar with 3-2 beer. They sold it at mini markets and stuff like that in Minnesota. It's like the half power of a regular beer, you know? And they would sell them at ball games and stuff like that. But anyway, that's what we got. It was like 3-2 beer. I think he got a case. I mean, each of us had a six pack. And man, I remember it tasted disgusting. However, I would power through that because somehow I knew it would make me feel different and better. And lo and behold, it did. I think I drank all six beers within an hour, and my whole body felt like it was connected to a live wire. You know what I mean? Just full of electricity. It felt amazing. And somebody called the cops on us. We were running around neighborhoods. I was stumbling. I got caught in a bunch of thorn bushes. The cops caught me. They brought me home. I got in trouble. That's kind of like a mini story of how my entire drinking career went. So I was a weekend drinker off the start. And one of the things that was common for me was I would get angry and get into fights when I drank. And I remember my friends would always say things like, "John, like, please tonight, don't start a fight. We're trying to meet some girls, and you're gonna get into a fight, and you're gonna ruin everything." And I'm like, "Yeah, no problem. No way. I'm not gonna get into a fight. I'm not even gonna drink that much. It's all gonna be cool." And it would start off the night, and I would be like the life of the party, and then somewhere in there, the light switch would go off, and the lights are on and no one's home, and I wouldn't remember things. I would get into lots of fights and say things I didn't to my friends that I would never say sober, and that happened quite a bit. And I always just thought that I just need to figure it out. Like, I need to learn how to drink better. And then fast forward, So I finished high school, and I joined the Navy, went out to San Diego, and at the time you could drink when you were 18 on base, and I would get wasted out there, and I ended up getting into a fight with a kid and broke his jaw, and now I'm getting court-martialed in my early stages of my Navy career. I just remember thinking that maybe I had a problem. And a friend of mine introduced me to some an old Vietnam vet, and he took me to some AA meetings, but I wasn't ready for the message yet, you know. I went to a couple of AA meetings, but you know, when they were, you remember that Charlie Brown, when the teacher would talk, I was like, wah, 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 wah. I would sit in these meetings, these AA meetings, and that's what it sounded like to me. It was like, wah, wah, wah. And I just remember thinking it was odd that why would a bunch of guys who were trying not to drink get around and talk about drinking? Because I couldn't hear, like, the spiritual solution side of things, you know. But I didn't drink for like 6 months, and my life got better, and I got past the court martial, and I stayed in the Navy and this and that. And then I remember, and it's not like I was in AA, I just went to some AA meetings. And but I remember I got bored one day, and I was like, well, I'm gonna go get a 12 pack and watch Rambo and order some pizza. And shortly thereafter, it's like, well, I guess I drink again. And the same thing, I ended up going to SEAL training and joining the SEAL teams. And that was pretty cool because it was kind of like cool to drink, to fight, and to go chase women around. And so I fit right in, and until I didn't. And again, same story as high school. It was like, hey, John, we're trying to meet some girls tonight. Just don't start a fight because it ruins everything. The cops come and everybody goes away and it's not good. And I would promise my friends that I wouldn't get that drunk and I wouldn't start a fight. And sure enough, I would. And it got to the point where literally my best friends are like, okay, who's watching John this weekend? Because I watched him last weekend. I get this weekend off. I still was trying to figure out how to drink better, differently, or figure it out. So I tried, you know, when they do the readings, I tried only drinking at home. I tried not drinking home and only drinking out. I tried just drinking beer. I tried just doing, hard drinks. I tried taking on more exercise, self-help books, you name it. I tried it. Nothing was working, and I still wasn't willing to even think about the fact that I might be an alcoholic. To me, an alcoholic was like somebody in the street gutters, you know, with the paper bottle, with the bottle in the paper sack and all that stuff, and didn't make sense to me. And then it got to the point where I think I'd been in the Navy for about 8 years, I was getting ready to go on to do another special unit, and it dawned on me that this other unit that I was getting to go to wouldn't tolerate my drinking behavior. And I knew that I wouldn't be able to change my behavior. And so basically I made the decision to leave the Navy rather than not drink before I got kicked out of the Navy, basically. So I got an honorable discharge. I moved back home, and I'm like, all right, I'm gonna go back home. I'm gonna go to college. I'm gonna get it together, be success in business, and found the same guys that I was hanging out with my whole life from the SEAL teams and in high school that liked to party hard. Wasn't before long that I was doing the same things I was doing before and suffering the same consequences. Still wasn't willing to take a look at the fact that maybe I shouldn't drink and that maybe I had a problem. And I ended up going over to Afghanistan with a buddy of mine who talked me into going with him to do a contract. We were bodyguards for the State Department for President Karzai. It's like 2004. And we went over there and I loved it. I thought it was awesome. We had our own bar and I found the same guys over there. And fortunately I didn't get in trouble. However, what ended up happening is I met a reporter, a female, that I had really fallen for. And I ended up becoming her bodyguard. She worked for a news company. And we ended up having a relationship. And I remember I really was in love with this woman, though. And I remember thinking, I cannot let her see me get drunk. And I cannot say or do anything that's going to jeopardize this relationship because of my drinking. And so I tried real hard not to get drunk, and I did pretty good for a little while, you know. And then of course then it happened, and I got drunk, and I said stuff that I, you know, would never say sober, and I just remember thinking that I blew it, and it was, I ruined it, and the strangest thing happened. She didn't get mad. She was upset, but she understood, and she was like, you know, some people just can't drink. It's okay, I understand. Maybe you're one of those people. And I was like, really? But I was like, the first time when I was like, maybe I am. I don't know. And then I kind of blew it off, and she kind of blew it off, and I started drinking again. And I spent about a year in Afghanistan. I came home. Well, here's the deal. While I was in Afghanistan, it kind of started my daily drinking. I would drink every night, like a bottle of wine every night. And when I got back to the States, I had a couple hundred grand saved up, and I was going to go to college, and had all these plans, and my drinking and my partying disagreed with my plans. And it was about a couple months of being back where I got to the point where it was clear to me that my drinking was not going to allow me to achieve any of my goals. And I remember telling myself, all right, John, we're going to get our shit together. We're not going to drink for 30 days, get back in shape, and we'll go do another contract, because that was kind of fun. And it wasn't a couple days would go by of not drinking, and I would think, I'm like, did I really mean it? I can't have one drink. Like, it's like every man's right to have one drink at the after work, right, at the end of the day. And I remember grabbing a glass, and there was some wine, and I poured a glass of wine. It wasn't a glass of wine. It was actually like a drinking cup full of wine. So it was probably like two glasses of wine. But to me, it was one cup, one glass. And so, but I was looking at the alcohol percentage in it, and I was like, that's not very much. So I think I poured some vodka in the wine too. It's because I could just have one cup. And, you know, and then after you drink that, it was like, oh, what the hell, let's just keep going. After I failed at trying to basically clean up, you know, not drink for 30 days, I never made it more than a couple days, but this experiment happened about three times. And eventually I got to the point where I knew that I needed help, that I wasn't going to be able to do it. And in particular, one morning I woke up and my hand was shaking. And I remember going, because I was staying in my buddy's like guest house, and I knew he had alcohol in the house. It was like early in the morning, so I'm like sneaking into his house, going looking through his booze cabinet, and all I could find was Captain Morgan, and I hate Captain Morgan. I couldn't find any mixers or anything like that. All I could find was like day old cold coffee, and I mixed the Captain Morgan and the cold coffee together, and I drank it, and my hand stopped shaking, and I was like, oh, I feel normal, I feel good now. And once that hit me though, that's when I was like, oh shoot, that's not a good sign. That's definitely alcoholism. And and I decided that I needed to get help. And I asked some of my friends for help that I was partying with, and they were like, what? What are you talking about? You're not an alcoholic. Like, besides, you don't want to quit on a low. Everybody quits on a low. You want to quit on a high. Like, come on. Stop talking crazy. And so I knew that they weren't going to help me. And the funniest thing happened. I got a phone call from one of my best friends. We had met when he was actually the guy that bought me the freaking six pack that I drank the first time. He was like a trust fund kid. His dad was filthy rich. And he had probably already been to, now we're like 30 years old, he'd probably been to a dozen rehabs at this point. It was almost like a yearly thing. Like, oh, you're going to go to rehab to like get in shape or whatever. Never stayed sober. And we had had like a falling out, and I hadn't talked to him in a year. So here's me, 30 years old, just kind of came to the conclusion that I'm an alcoholic and I needed to get help because I couldn't do it on my own. And I get a phone call from him. And I remember I was mad at him. So I answer the phone. I'm like, what the f- do you want? He's like, oh man, I just, you know, how you doing? I'm like, I'm good. What do you want? He's like, well, you know, I'm sober now. I'm like, yeah, I've heard that before. He's like, no, really, I've been sober for the last 9 months. And I couldn't believe it. And he's like, I promise you, I have been sober for 9 months. And I was like, well, it's quite a coincidence because I need to get sober. And he goes, well, where do you live? And I said, I live in San Diego right now. Where are you? He goes, well, I'm in Newport Beach. And Newport Beach is like an hour and a half north of San Diego. And I was like, damn. He's like, yeah, I'll come down and get you tomorrow. And I was like, okay. And so he comes down to get me, and the reporter that I was dating came, flew in to help me get into rehab, and they're like, meet me at this restaurant. So I go to go meet him, and I go in there, and he's with our one train wreck buddy from back home, and he's drinking, and I'm like, what are you doing? You said you've been sober for 9 months, and he's like, oh, it's just a slip. He's just a slip. But, I kind of was like, I was pretty crushed in the moment, but he was able to convince me that it was a slip and that we were going to still go up to Newport Beach and get into AA and stuff. And so later that night, we're like toasting to AA. Yeah, we're going to go to AA. and literally we went back up to Newport Beach, and the next day he was like, yeah, I'm done. I'm going back to AA. I'm going to rat on myself and talk to my sponsor. I'm like, okay, well, I need to get into rehab. He made some phone calls. They couldn't find a place. He was able to get Betty Ford to take me at midnight. Of course, I didn't want to go. And I was refusing to go. And my SEAL buddies back in San Diego were threatening to come and rescue me from him, and so he's freaking out, and his sponsor's like, well, just get him blackout drunk so he has no choice to get in your car. And so he poured me like a huge one of those like big gulp cups of Crown Royale, and I slammed it, and I was out cold, and next thing I know it's like 1 a.m. I'm outside, I'm in Palm Desert outside Betty Ford, and he's waking me up. He's like, get the fuck out of the car and go. I was like, dude, let's go in the morning. Let's get a hotel. He's like, no, dude, get out, go. I had like a laundry, I didn't even have a suitcase. I had a laundry basket full of clothes. He's like, beat it. And so I walk into to Betty Ford, and to my revolt, it was an AA program, because I always made fun of AA. I just was like, man, I didn't want to do it. And then the nurse is like asking me to like all the things I'd done, you know, on my whole life. And as she's asking, I'm like rattling off this list. I was like, good Lord, that guy's got a problem. They gave me this, like, you know, I'm paying 30 grand and they put me in they give me a roommate. I'm like, I'm giving you 30 grand to stay here for a month. I don't want a roommate. They're like, well, that's how it works here. And I was like, in this little crappy twin bed. And like, I'm like, I like to sleep till 10 and I like to work out twice a day. And they're like, you don't get it, buddy. Like, that's not how this works. And so, they remember they gave me, they gave me Valium or whatever to help you come down off the alcohol. So I was kind of in like a stupor for the first week, kind of drooling a little bit. They wean you off of it. So when I got weaned off of it, though, I remember looking around and I was like, where are all the doctors? Like, what is this? Where am I? What are we doing here? Like, all we're doing is sitting in these groups and like holding hands, singing Kumbaya. Like, where are the freaking doctors? I have a problem. Okay. Giving hugs is not going to take care of my problem. And, I wanted my phone back. I threatened to kill everybody, and they gave me my phone. And I called everybody I knew, and they all hung up on me. And then I called the reporter, and she was the one that was like, I don't think we're going to be able to be together unless you're sober, so you should probably stay there. And so she convinced me to stay, and I did stay. And, you know, the lights started to come on, and I started to kind of get into it, and I was terrified of drinking again, that's for sure. And they said that the people that stay sober are the ones that take direction. And I had no idea what I was going to do with my life. And I was like, I need some direction. I'm afraid if I go back into SEAL teams, I'm going to drink again. And if I go overseas and do contract work again, I'm going to drink again. I don't know what to do. And they said, well, we should go to a sober living place. And so that same friend of mine that got me in there lived in a town that had a lot of sober living houses. And so he came and picked me up with another guy that was like the manager of one of the houses. And he brought me over there. And soon as we got to the house, they were having a barbecue. And my buddy's like, that's my sponsor. And by the way, you should ask this guy to be your sponsor. And I was like, ooh, I don't want to. You want me to ask another man to be my sponsor? That sounds kind of gay. I was like, I don't know if I'm into that. Like, can I ask a woman to be my sponsor? To me, men were adversaries, you know? Like, I felt like I grew up with, my mom kind of raised me with her three sisters, so I felt more comfortable being vulnerable with women. And they're like, no, that's not how it works. So I was like, oh, shit, all right, well, let me go talk to this guy. So I started talking to this guy. At the time, he had been sober for like 15 years, and he had a family, he had a business, like he had his life together by then. And I still was like, I don't know. But then I was like, yeah, I just got back from Afghanistan. He's like, oh, I was in Afghanistan. And I was like, no way, when? He's like, oh, back in the 80s, I was over there trying to smuggle hash. And I was like, no way. That's awesome, because I was just over there smoking hash in Afghanistan. Will you be my sponsor? And he's like, yeah, well, let's just see how this works. Like, I'll be your temporary sponsor. Like, here's, meet me at this meeting tomorrow. Call me tomorrow and we'll figure it out. And so, you know, I started calling him, and he started giving me directions. He told me to go to a meeting every day, 90 meetings in 90 days. He told me to collect phone numbers. I didn't want to do it, but I did it. He told me to get, service commitments. So I was a greeter, you know, coffee guy, chairperson, literature, you name it. And I think I had been sober for a couple months. We had done the first three steps, and that same buddy of mine that got me into Betty Ford is like, we're gonna go to Cabo on my dad's fishing yacht, but we're gonna be sober and we're gonna go to AA down there. And I was like, okay, we can do that, let's do it. He's like, but I'm inviting our worst alcoholic friends from back home. I was like, okay. All the intentions in the world, but as soon as we woke, we got on the plane, I woke up on the plane, like they were drinking, I ordered a drink, and basically we drank our faces off for a week straight in Cabo, and I was miserable. But it proved something to me though, because I couldn't, for one, I just was so beat up. I remember drinking a whole like bottle of vodka, and I couldn't get that feeling back. I couldn't get the good feeling from it. And I knew that all my problems were still waiting for me. And I was in that mental prison again that I had fortunately escaped for a couple months before this. And I just was like, I can't wait to get back there and get sober and like, God, please help me. And when we came back and we're going back to Newport Beach, and it was like a sign from God. There's like a rainbow. I'm not kidding. There was a rainbow coming down right over into Newport Beach. And I was like, that's my sign from God. Mm-hmm. I called my sponsor and I was like, yeah, I drank. And he's like, yeah, I figured you would. I was like, oh, you didn't say anything. He's like, well, I wasn't going to stop you. I mean, I was like, will you still sponsor me? And he said, it depends. What did you figure out? And I was like, well, the party's over. I can't. It's done. Like, if I was going to make the most spectacular, awesome party in the world, it would be me and these four guys on a yacht in Cabo. That would be the best party in the world. And that's what we had. And I was miserable and the party's over. And he's like, okay, good. Then we can do step four next. And man, I was out of my mind. He told me to go to like the Orange County AA convention. Didn't want to do it. And well, we backed up. I was like, my sponsor's name is Jack. I was like, Jack, to be honest with you, I wasn't doing everything you were asking me to do. He's like, okay, how'd that work? And I was like, not very well. I go, I tell you what, I'll do everything you want me to do, even if I think it's stupid. Because he'd be like, oh, read page, you know, whatever, 65, five times before you go to bed. And I'm like, okay, I might read it once, blow out the other ones. But after I had that slip, I was terrified that I was going to be that person that we hear about in the readings that's constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. And I knew that if I couldn't be honest with myself, that I couldn't stay sober. And I was terrified of not being able to stay sober, because there were things that I wanted to achieve in my life, and I knew that I couldn't if I didn't stay sober. And if I lied to how am I going to know if I'm a liar to myself? And so I just remember praying to God. I'm like, God, please don't let me be a liar. Because it says in there, like, there are people with grave emotional and mental disorders, and they can stay sober. So you're telling me that people can be crazy assholes and stay sober, but you can't stay sober if you're an effing liar. I was like, all right, God, just don't let me be a liar. And so I told my sponsor I'll do everything you tell me to do for 12 steps, no matter what. And then after the 12 steps are over with, we'll renegotiate this, see how it goes. And so that's what I did, and it wasn't easy at all. It was not easy. I was crazy. I had panic attacks. I was suicidal, homicidal, you name it. But I did everything my sponsor told me to do. I went to a meeting 90 and 90.
90 meetings in 90 days.
Yeah, 90 meetings in 90 days. In fact, I went to a meeting before work and after work, because the only place that I didn't, where I could have a little bit of peace was in a meeting. If I was not in a meeting in that first year of sobriety, I was ready to lose my mind. And so my sponsor, we went through the steps. We did like one a week, I think around 6 months. We'd gone through all 12 steps, and he's like, go sponsor people. And so I was terrified to do it. I didn't think I had anything to offer. And he's like, look, you've got way more in common with somebody that just stopped drinking at having 6 months and gone through the steps than I do having 20 years. Start working with people. And if you have any questions, you ask me and I'll tell you what you should do. But it's important to give it away in order to keep it. And so that's what I did. I've been blessed to be able to do that pretty continuously over the last 20 years. And I would say it was probably around like the fourth or fifth year when finally like the panic attacks and the anxiety and all that stuff went away. And I remember it was around 2009, the financial meltdown was happening. I was in commercial real estate at the time, and so like all my transactions basically shit the bed, and I wasn't going to be able to afford my rent, and I had to stay on friends' couches, you know. And I'm sober for 4 years, and I'm like, God, what the F? I've been sober for 4 years and you're going to reward me with this? Like, but here's the thing, is I thought that the gifts of sobriety were going to be like material things, you know what I mean? And I thought that the gift of having a relationship with the higher power was going to be like this enlightenment, that I would never feel pain anymore. I'd always be happy. both totally, completely unrealistic expectations. And so, again, I've been sober 40 years. I got no place to live. I got no job. I'm trying to get a job. And I remember thinking that I was staying with a buddy, and he had vodka in the freezer, and I was like, I bet I could. And I didn't want to drink to get drunk. I wanted to drink to, like, go bye-bye, like, to see oblivion, to be gone, to kill myself. And instead, I went for a long run, and I remember stopping, overlooking the bay, and I was, like, you know, talking to God, and I was like, what the hell? And finally, I was like, you know what, God, fine. I don't have to have the business or any money or a house or a wife or this or that. I'll tell you, I'm not going to kill myself and I'm not going to drink. And if life sucks, then fine, whatever. But that's it. And once I kind of came to that realization, it, literally the next morning, like, the darkness was gone. It was like gone. I was able to see things that I couldn't see before. And one of the experiences, I went to this meeting, and there was, it's like 200 person men's meeting, and it's in this really fancy part of Orange County called Corona Del Mar. There's like Ferraris outside and stuff like that. And they were doing birthdays, and there was a guy with 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years. And I'm sitting in this meeting, and they go up and they're sharing. And I remember thinking, like, what the hell is that guy doing in meetings still at 40 years sober? Like, clearly he's has a lot of money and he's got his shit together. And like the guy with 30 years, same thing, the guy with the 20 years. And I was just like, I can get it. And then I was listening to them share, and I was like, oh, okay, they still have challenges, like, up here and, like, in here. And whatever that they need, they're getting in this meeting. And I was like, there's no secret meetings, so they're getting it from this meeting. And then I was like, well, maybe I can get it from this meeting. And then I was like, why am I not getting it from this meeting? And I was like, maybe I need to listen more. And then once that clicked, that's kind of when I stopped judging meetings too. And stopped, something changed where I was like, man, I get to go to a meeting today. And I know that after the meeting, I'm going to have the best day ever, no matter what. And even if I don't have a job, I've got a purpose. I'm sponsoring so-and-so. I have all these sober friends. I have a sponsor myself. I'm straight. I've done the steps. Like, I did my ninth step. I'm straight with everybody in my life. Like, I don't owe anybody anything. I'm not running from anybody. It's pretty cool. And I can, like, everything that I like to do is for fun and for free outside, whether it's riding my bike or going to the park or whatever. And I was pretty astonished that at this relatively material low point in my life, I could feel fulfilled and full of purpose and still have joy. And that's when I realized, I was like, oh, the spiritual principles are to help us feel good even when things aren't going good. I was like, oh, okay, I get it now. And then I realized that, oh, okay, so, we have to go through challenges. God didn't make, this is just me and my beliefs, by the way, so God didn't make us perfect because then we'd be like robots. We have free will, and there's some things that I like to hold on to. You know, they talk about our character defects, and it talks about, like, our instincts gone wild, right? And some things I'm not willing to let go of. And the cool part is because I'm sober, I can't escape my conscience and I can't escape the pain. And so I feel pain when my behavior isn't good, or my thought pattern isn't good. And eventually I feel enough pain that I'm willing to change. And that's when I find growth. And so I kind of had it wrong in the beginning. I was trying to escape pain and I was trying to, find my worth in material stuff. And 5 years sober, the light kind of comes on, and the next thing I'm like, God, what do you want me to do with my life? I don't know what do you want me to be? What do you want me to do? Because clearly my career path sucks right now. And I was meditating and journaling, and it was literally like he tapped me on the shoulder. He was like, well, John, your primary purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. And I was like, oh, shoot. I've been doing that for like 5 years now. I can do that. I'm good at that. I was like, that's awesome. Cool. All right. Awesome. All right. So what do you want me to do for work? And he goes, I don't give a shit. Just stay sober and help other alcoholics achieve sobriety. And I was like, well, badass, I'm going back in the SEAL teams then. And fortunately, I had a guy in my meetings was a merchant marine, and he was sober longer than I was. And I had watched him go on like, 2, 3, 4 month deployments overseas without a meeting, because he's out on a boat, right? And watching him stay sober overseas and come back gave me the confidence that I could go back into the military and go on a deployment and not drink again. And so I kind of dabbled my feet in the military by joining the reserves. And then I did some overseas contracts. One of them was for the DEA. I thought that was kind of funny, because if they knew all the things I'd done, they would never hire me. And I spent a year in Afghanistan with them, and then another one was with the NSA, and shuttling them around Afghanistan. That was pretty cool. And then it got to, oh, and here's kind of an interesting side note. When I got sober, I owed like $60,000 to the IRS, and after my real estate career. My short 3-4 year real estate career, I owed like another 30 to friends and family. So I was like $100,000 in the hole, and for like 7 years. And that drove me nuts. It drove me so crazy. I felt guilty even like buying myself a t-shirt, because I wanted to pay everybody back. And so when I started doing these contracts, I was able to save up and pay that off. And I did pay it off, and it felt awesome for 2 weeks, and that was about it. And I thought, what a jip. I've suffered over this $100,000 only to feel good about paying it off for 2 weeks. But there was an important lesson there, and the lesson was, the pain of wanting is much, it doesn't have to be that way. And it's much greater than the joy of having is, if that makes sense. And so another thing I learned in AA is I don't have to be a victim of myself. Like, I can change my attitude. I can change my perspective on things. I don't have to, when I was drinking and stuff like that, I was like, oh, this is just the way it is and the way I am, and I'm gonna be pissed and I'm gonna let everybody know. And that's cool, because I'm just being authentic. After I got sober, I learned that there's this thing called restraint, and that you don't have to be an asshole to everybody. And that, if you don't like the way you're thinking and feeling, you can actually do something about it and change it. And change the way you're looking at something. I think, after I finished, I paid off all my debt, I joined the Navy full time. And I'd been sober, let's see, that was 2012. I'd been sober for 7 years, and then I moved out to Virginia Beach. And And that was pretty cool. One of the guys that I used to drink with and party with that I went to Afghanistan with in 2004 on Karzai's detail, he ended up getting sober, and so did his wife. And I got to reconnect with them now in a new sober life. That was awesome. My dad came out, and my dad is, alcoholism runs in the family, I'll say that. He needed to get sober, but because he came out to visit me, it forced me to find meetings around the house because he couldn't drive or anything like that. And so that kind of helped me build my, it's a challenging thing. I don't know if you get, how many people have this experience, but you get sober in one place and you've got like your meeting schedule is down, your network's solid. And then you move to a new place and it's kind of like you got to start all over with that stuff. And I tell you what, it was, I think I might have went to one meeting a month after I moved here for about 9 months. Not a good idea for your spiritual well-being or for, how close you want to get to a drink. But like I said, my dad came out to visit, and he was doing 90 and 90, and so I needed to find meetings near the apartment that he could go walk to, and so that's how I found my home group, Sober at 7 at St. Mike's, down in Virginia Beach there, and it still is to this day. I met a woman, and I got married, and we've got two kids. I have a 7-year-old boy and a 4-year-old boy. And they're amazing. And I'll say this, I didn't know how selfish I was until I got married and had kids. Time is, yeah. I don't have a whole lot of time to myself anymore. I didn't realize, I'll just say this, it's super easy to stay sober and run an awesome program when you're single. being married and having kids, it's been a challenge, but it talks about it in the book too. It's like AA doesn't have the patent on like spiritual well-being and wellness. I've taken advantage of marriage counseling, and I've taken advantage of art therapy, which has helped me tremendously to be a better parent. I tell you what, it's been almost 20 years. It's been March 25th, 2025, it'll be 20 years, assuming I don't drink between now and then. But it's amazing, a grateful alcoholic. When I first heard that when I was in my early sobriety, I thought, what a stupid thing to say. But thinking, when I think back on it, it's like, even if I wasn't an alcoholic, how would I don't know what I would do to, where would I learn all this stuff? I don't know. And I don't know that I would have the, I don't know that, because I have to learn all this stuff because my life depends on it. I don't know that I would do that otherwise, you know what I mean? And so now I understand what a grateful alcoholic is. And here's another cool thing. I used to make gratitude lists when I was first sober. And in the beginning, it was just like, I can walk, I have food, I have a bed, I have clothes. And then over time, it was like, I have a job and this and that. And then after like a couple years, it was like all the things changed into people. Oh, my sponsor, Jack, my sober friend, Evan, Kevin. And it was like pretty soon I would like do this gratitude list of people, and it would be like 100 names. And it would blow me away. I'm like, damn, those are all AA people. Because I used to really, like, in the first 5 years of sobriety, I used to really be pissed off about getting sober and, like, going through all that stuff. And then it dawned on me when I was looking at all those names, and I was like, man, I would never trade all these names to not go through all that pain and struggle. You know what I mean? And so, yeah, I'm super, super grateful for that. And it's so awesome to be. And then too, like, we don't really bond with each other over like our successes, right? Like, it's the struggles that really bring us together, you know? And I've been fortunate enough to be able to use the difficult times throughout in my life that I've gone through in drinking and in sobriety to help relate to somebody else that's going through similar things. And like, I can't think of a more cool and righteous and honorable thing to do than to be able to share with another person the hell that you've been through, that they're going through, and give them the hope and some direction and some suggestions to help them get themselves out of it. I just think that's like, I know, it's kind of like hostage rescue in a way. It's pretty awesome. And so that's really where I get my purpose from today, and like my that's what makes me feel good about myself is I get to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. So I think that's kind of like my story, man. So thanks for letting me share, and thanks for asking me to be here. God bless.